Welcome back to Following Noah Donna Stormlight Podcast. This week, we are in chapters 26 through 40 of The Sunlit Man. Paul, how are you?
I am dandy. I'm excited to talk about Sunlit Man some more. I'll keep it brief. There we are. Looking forward to it.
Elliot?
I'm doing great. I'm glad to be here talking with you guys because this is a talk about it kind of book. That is for sure. I need to digest some things with y'all. So I'm excited. Let's do it.
Sounds good. We will roll intro and then we'll get a brief summary of events from Elliot. All right, Elliot. Paul, are you stealing the mic?
Yes. Before you run off with the wise explanations, Elliot, I would like to introduce a new patron this week. I made sure to look, as always now, we do not have a surgeon. We have an ardent in our midst, and we're very excited to shout out. I wrote the entire username. However, I feel like this should be abbreviated to perhaps Hubris. I'm going to go with Hubris. But I wrote Hubris in XS. It was a bit, I didn't know if there's some pronunciation that's going over my head, but Hubris, it was all lowercase, so I was like, okay, we'll go with that. But yes, we have an ardent, and I'm trying not to make fun of my handwriting, but we have an ardent, and we're very grateful to have ardents in our midst, lots of wise, smart people. You know, we are doing our best to be wise and smart on this podcast as well. Elliot said it right whenever he said that this is a very much a talking book. Like, we have to, you know, meet and talk through all the things. I've settled into a point that I will read through and I'm like, I know there are things that are probably going over my head, but I know we'll talk about it and things will start to click more. So, without further ado, thank you, Hubris, and I'll let Elliot intro in our chapter summaries.
Okie doke. Sunlit Man, chapters 26 through 40. That's what I've got over here. A lot of stuff going on in this book. Our characters in 26 are still trying to fly the city of Beacon over a mountain. We're in a different corridor of the planet than we normally are, or a different area. They're trying to pull a fast one on the Cinder King and get away by flying over the mountain. Requires some re-engineering of their engines. So they're working on that. Nomad and the engineers are making some updates. They're testing out new designs for the engines. As they're doing this, they notice, or Nomad notices, that the Night Brigade has arrived in orbit. So there's that as well, adding some pressure to our heroes. We get what for me at least is an incredible drop that auxiliary is a high spren. That'll take some analysis for sure.
To clarify, that is a Skybreaker spren, not just a high spren in the terms of like a Knight Radiant spren, a high spren in terms of specifically a Skybreaker spren.
Yes. Yes.
I appreciate that you specified that, Trevor, because I kind of was like, isn't that just the term for every higher talking spren? It's not just like a little like pain spren or rot spren or whatever. Okay.
It's in the same vein as Brandon using the term shard bearer for someone who has a shard, where we're talking about shards of Adonalsia. Anyway. Get your term straight, Brandon. But yes, high spren can mean both a sentient spren that has to do with a Knight Radiant, but also a Skybreaker spren specifically. Carry on.
Meanwhile, back to our engineers working on rocket engines. They succeed. They put their new water steam-powered rocket engines on the city. They fly up over the mountain. They make it over. They kind of crash down the backside. Now they're out of power, so they spent everything they had to get over the mountain, which they did, so they survived. But now they can't fly their city away from the coming dawn, the sun. So they hatch a new plan to go fetch some more sun hearts. They're going to fly into the storm, the maelstrom, to go get some more sun hearts for power. They fly that direction. Lo and behold, this was a surprise for Nomad and quite a shock for me as well. The storm is not a water storm. It's a firestorm. And so they have to fly into the firestorm to get the sun hearts. Nomad casually, you know, steps out of the ship in the middle of the firestorm, tries to get some hearts. Doesn't quite succeed, but does survive. The Cinder King arrives to gather his sun hearts, does so. Nomad sneaks aboard his ship. Zeal, who's one of our Beacon Knights' little buddies, manages to do the same, actually. Nomad and Zeal steal the sun hearts, make a run for it. Nomad also manages to, in the midst of all this, steal the Rosharan sun heart that the Cinder King has, which is a big deal because it helps him learn a little bit more about how to leech the torment off of his soul, which he successfully does a little bit, which gives him the ability to fight, which is big because then we enter into a pretty epic fight scene where Nomad fights off all the bad guys who are chasing after them. They try to get back to Beacon. They make it back to Beacon. We get an epic scene with Nomad flying into the sunlight, the completely destroy, evaporate everything sunlight, create a giant shield to shield the final ship, which was not going to make it out of the sunlight into shadow. They do make it because Nomad covers them with his giant shield. They make it all the way through. The Beaconites are so impressed and thankful that they give him a new name. Nomad is now Zellion. And that's kind of where we end these chapters.
Question. Had either of you heard the term or name Zellion before these chapters?
I had not heard the name Zellion before these chapters, but it was pretty funny. I backed the Kickstarter for the role-playing game that is coming out. That was like a couple months ago. Like 2 days after I read the chapter where we get the name drop Zellion, I happened to be checking back in on the RPG and managed to find a picture of one of the orderables on that Kickstarter was a little miniature of Zellion, which I did not even notice or see before. So I absolutely could have seen that name before, but missed it somehow. So this was the first time that I noticed it, unless it's like name dropped in another book that you're about to tell us that we completely missed.
While I do not remember the name Zellion, I did want to point out, I think the only other character that we've seen with this many names or more is maybe Hoid, who also coincidentally had a Dawn Shard, this same Dawn Shard. So I'm just thinking there's maybe that's something we didn't know about Dawn Shards, or maybe that's something of what Hoid is teaching Sigzil, is that names are very important and you need a bunch of them. You just need to get a bunch. So
I mean, I don't know if you're joking or not, but auxiliary.
I am, for the record, I'm joking.
Yeah. Auxiliary covers it in the chapter, which we'll get to probably towards the end. That the fact that they give him a name is what finally connects him, capital C, to the planet. And having a local name has intent, capital I, intent with it, which allows him to connect him to the planet. So you actually might be onto something, that if Wit has a lot of different names in different places that might help him with his powers. Like, genuinely, there might be something there.
I definitely missed that detail, because that is actually something legitimate that I was not going for. That I slipped into maybe a little bit of a success there. So actually, I'm going to take back all the things I was saying. Yes, I did catch on to that, and I knew exactly that that's what was going on, and it now explains why Hoid has so many names. It's his connection.
Might be. Okay. Elliot, you are correct that was the one place you could have found the name was the Brotherwise RPG Kickstarter for the miniatures like 2 years ago. They named one of their miniatures Zellion before we had this book. And so everybody was like, okay, who is Zellion? Because they're obviously in Stormlight and we're trying to figure it out. Everybody thought it was L. At the end of Rhythm of War, we get that fused guy who shows up and kills the pursuer with anti-void light. His name is L. And then people were, wondering if that was Zellion. And then we thought it was like a code name, so we were trying to decipher the code name Zellion. But turns out it was a spoiler that Brotherwise was allowed to include into their Kickstarter from Brandon. And so he intentionally put it in there knowing that we'd get a published book with the name Zellion within the next couple months of that Kickstarter going. So the reveal that Sigzil is Zellion, people were on the lookout for around this time that the book was released, just to give you guys a little bit more context. So, with that being said, this entire book, up until, I don't know, chapter 29, actually it's like 32, Sigzil has made the assumption that when the term storm is mentioned, or maelstrom, well, that means water. You know, his interpretation of that word, obviously, that means a rainstorm. He's seen rainstorms already on this planet. Okay, there's just a bad one. It reminds me of home. That's nice. No. This is what is left of the dusk of the sun circling the planet, and there is fire falling from the sky. What do you guys think of our maelstrom sequence?
See, I think I even wrote in the live reactions, which is really funny. I was writing whenever this was, they come up with the premise that they're going to go into the maelstrom. They're going to brave the perils of the maelstrom to beat the Cinder King to the Cinder Hearts and save the, that's how they were going to get ahead. And I was like, this is going to be so cool. We have the Sunlit Man, Sigzil, Zellion, right? We know he's a member of Bridge 4 under Kaladin Stormblast. I was like, what's going to be crazy and cool? Mention he's going to go in and he's going to brave the maelstrom and become not only Sunlit, but Stormblast. And I thought that was really fun. And I guess a little bit different than I thought. I think I was a little off the mark, which that did not happen thus far.
So in reality, he becomes like Stormlit.
Yeah. I think that's the right. The Stormlit Man. Yeah.
When we got to the firestorm, that was the moment I had to go back and revisit my schematic of the planet. And Trevor, you warned me that I had something wrong on my diagram. Yeah. Oh yes, I did. And I do have a revised version for you if you guys pop in the Discord chat and take a look. I've added a few things to my schematic, my diagram of what is going on with the planet. I can talk you guys through them. It'll just take a quick second. Hopefully, Trevor, you can pull this up on the screen for our YouTube viewers. For audio listeners, I apologize. This is going to not make a whole lot of sense for the next 2 minutes or so. This is one of my busiest visual aids I've created yet. So highly recommend either hopping on our YouTube channel or jumping in our Discord. I'll post this in our podcast Discord as well, so you can find some references in there to this visual aid and all the other previous ones I've created as well. A couple things I've added. First off, in one of these chapters, Nomad, Sigzil, Zellion, whatever we're going to call him going forward, does take a guess that the diameter of the planet is about 200 miles, which, if that doesn't mean too much to you in the context of planets, that's ridiculously small. Like we knew the planet was small. This is asteroid size. This is not planet size. This is not dwarf planet size. If you look at our planet, our solar system where Earth is, there's a lot of objects now out there that astronomers are calling dwarf planets. I mean, famously, Pluto got downgraded from planet to dwarf planet, right?
I just Googled Pluto diameter.
What is it?
1,476 miles.
And there's a bunch of other dwarf planets. Well, let me see. I'm going to say something wrong. It's like easily fact checkable. There's a couple of candidates for dwarf planets. All of them are much larger than 200 miles. We are talking about an asteroid here. We are talking about a very large asteroid that these people are living on, which is just crazy. It's crazy. Anyway, a couple other things I've added are now on the left side. So I've added the Firestorm, no longer a water storm. It's definitely a Firestorm. And then the other thing which Nomad realizes toward the end of this set of chapters is that we do have some sort of a like source and destination going on with this investiture. The sun is dumping out investiture and the core of this planet is sucking it all up. And that's why you get this ridiculous stream of power that just blasts the surface of the planet with all this. Nomad thinks about it like an electric current. I'm actually thinking about it more as like a magnet, which electricity and magnetism are like arguably is the same thing and behave really similar in a lot of ways. But for me, I'm now thinking of this as like a repulsion point and an attraction point. This is like the north and south poles of a magnet that you might have. So think of the sun as the investiture repulsion point, just pushing all the investiture away from itself. And the core of the planet is the attraction point that's just sucking in all of the investiture. So that's why the day side of this planet is just getting absolutely blasted by all of this. So there you go. Updated version of Canticle.
Very nice. You did a very good job here. Yes, when I saw your first one, I saw the storm as little thunderclouds, and I was like, yeah, no.
This definitely impacted. We've talked about how perilous some of our planets are. We talked about Tress's planet being scary with the spores are kind of terrifying. And here, you know, the sun will disintegrate you. And, you know, we've talked about a lot of scary places. And this was kind of the step up of, oh, it's not a thunderstorm. It is a raining fire that's less fun. So it went up, even though this was, if not my scariest planet to be on, then maybe my second scariest planet to be on. I think it still took a bump up. You know, I don't want to live here, I'll be honest.
And I'm pulling up a calculator to figure out the circumference of this planet if it's 200 diameter. What is it, 2 pi r?
Correct. And I've given you a diameter, so it's just pi d. So 600 and something, 620.
Yeah, 620.
And 28, miles. Something like that. Yeah.
So they're traveling 628 miles per day.
Yes.
Interesting.
Elliot, in your chapter summaries, you were talking about how they were working to, you know, fly their city over the mountain, the 100, you know, foot elevation mountain. Thousand foot elevation mountain. This is mostly an aside, but I was thinking, like, I did not anticipate that a plot point would be your flying city, like, you know, is broken down. Like, you need to fill it up with gas to keep going. I think mentioned, you know, in our first two chapters about, like, the whole power system, like, you know, the technology here, which, I don't know, it's crazy to me to think about the technology on this planet because it is so small. Learning about how tiny it is makes it seem even crazier to me how We keep sacrificing people to power our steam engines to keep on going. You know, it's really crazy. Mm-hmm. And especially with it not really being sustainable or replenishing, you know, it's I don't know. It seems so desolate and wild. I wonder where Brandon got this idea from. I know I've seen that it may have been inspired, or at least in theme or style, by like Mad Max type of thing. And I haven't actually seen Mad Max, so I don't know if I fully understand. But yeah, it's a very cutthroat place, and it surprises me that this is where we're really getting the story. I will say, though, considering how small and how maybe fast-paced and linear these people's lives are, there's an awful lot of world building, and I will have to say that it's been pretty fascinating. You're talking about how dense, how much we're having to like talk through, and there's so much stuff that can kind of go over your head. It's kind of impressive, you know.
Well, and the amount of time he spends on like the science and engineering of it is actually fascinating as well. There's a particular set of chapters. I started talking about this in my live reaction Discord. I had to check myself because it felt like I was reading an Andy Weir novel, like The Martian, where he's done all this scientific research on what is the actual science that would happen behind this. The whole section where Nomad is climbing underneath the ship to break the ice free from the clamps because they flew up too high and it got cold and they weren't able to eject their spent rocket stages from the engines. Like all that was just, what are we on? Like, you know, Interstellar? What is this? In a cool way.
Yeah. I also had that thought of whenever I read this book, I've read it 3 times now. I've always thought, man, I should read The Martian. I should get around to reading that. Yes, like I'd enjoy it. Okay. Auxiliary. He is a Highspren, which is the reveal that Sigzil is in the Skybreakers, or at least was. How do we feel? That's not where we left him.
Yes, I was going to say, so this is... Okay, my understanding is there are 2 options. I'm bringing these 2 options up because one of them might be disproven here, and I'm curious to know. You know, please feel free to correct me. So if he is a Skybreaker, that means 1 of 2 things happened, right? Oh, wait, okay. Maybe I need to refresh myself. As we have seen at the end of Rhythm of War, I was going to say spoilers for Rhythm of War. If you're watching this and reading Sunlit Man and haven't read Rhythm of War,
what are you doing?
Yeah, something. You've gone off trail somewhere, and you should go read Rhythm of War. He has bonded a Spren at that point, right? Have we seen...
Not only has he bonded a Spren, he is third ideal Windrunner and the commander of the Windrunners.
Okay. He's a leader. Okay. All the Windrunners. He's the leader of all the Windrunners.
Okay. Yes. He's the field marshal.
So then, does this mean that him getting the Dawn Shard was likely what severed that tie, and then at some point he's gotten the Skybreaker Highspren? Is that what we're understanding here?
That's a great debate. Okay, so last episode, we got that Dawn Shard discussion with Auxiliary. Sigzil says specifically that the Dawn Shard wounded Auxiliary, not his Windrunner Spren. So presumably Sigzil was already a Skybreaker when he had access to a Dawn Shard, if only briefly.
Okay. So that was not what I thought it would be.
Yeah.
So either he had both bonded to some degree at the same time. Either that.
Feasible.
Or there's some event that we have not seen that led to the severing of his tie with his Windrunner spren, and at some point he picked up Auxiliary, the Skybreaker spren.
Let me read you a section, Paul, because it's extremely relevant to what we're talking about here.
Okay.
We get this information about Skybreaker here in chapter... It's early in this.
30.
10 chapters later, in chapter 40, Zellion at this point and Rebecca are having a conversation. And he kind of gives a really short, like, backstory on himself. And I keyed into it because I was looking for, like, the order of things he describes. How does he describe it as what happened? Here's what he says to her. "I was a knight," he said, "of a very exclusive order. Two different orders, actually, at two different times. For the first, I was one of their leaders, with oaths that were supposed to turn what I did from terrible into, if not beautiful, beautiful, honorable. But then... how do I explain this next part? A part he didn't fully understand himself. "I was given charge over an extremely dangerous item capable of killing gods, laying waste to planets. I carried that burden, found new bonds, but the weapon consumed important parts of me, shredded the soul of one of my dearest friends, stole my armor. I was left a husk of what I once been." I read that and it feels like two... like distinct periods of time for me. It's like Windrunners, I was leader of that. Then something happens. Then I found new bonds and became a Skybreaker.
The way I read it is Windrunner, something happens. Dawn Shard, Skybreaker. Dawn Shard consumes Auxiliary. So how does he become fourth ideal Skybreaker without having, because he talks about his armor. His armor is taken from him. He has to become a fourth ideal Skybreaker before Auxiliary is damaged by the Dawn Shard that he presumably got before that. Huh?
Right.
In my, I'm fully tracking with you, Trevor. In my head, though, I'm thinking that wasn't he fourth ideal Windrunner, or did he stop progression there with the Skybreaker spren onward? Because he says he was a part of two orders. I guess that's not specified of, like, he could have been at the same time. I'm very confused. Because we haven't seen that. We haven't seen anyone with two high spren of different orders. Is that possible?
But okay, so after, I'll hold your question for a second. After he protects the last ship with his big shield that we'll talk about here in a little bit, his armor begins to be attracted to him again. What did he just do? He protected people. That's a Windrunner trait. His Windrunner armor is returning to him, which would make him fourth ideal. Although the last time we saw him, he was third ideal.
It's still blowing my mind. One, that we even had somebody maybe leave an order and join another.
Yeah.
With the other possibility being even more crazy of potentially being part of two orders at the same time. Like,
yeah.
I don't know why I hadn't thought about this before, but this seems pretty big. Really big.
I want to talk about this for a second longer. So you're right, Elliot. I hadn't thought of that before. And I'm like, why hadn't I thought of that? You know, if you think of our other magic system, or I feel like there's not one that's directly comparable to this. Maybe you could talk about, like, the Skadrion magic systems, like gaining allomancy and different metals, whatever. I'm like, why isn't that a thought that of having multiple spren bonded or being a part of multiple orders? What if you could, you know, essentially Infinity Stone, get these other, you know, become members of all the different orders? But the thing is that each order of Knights Radiant seems way more deeply personal to your character as an individual, right?
Right, right.
Like the Windrunners, yeah. It is because of what you do that effectively attract that high spren, if you will, effectively place you in that order. you know, protecting. There's a lot of them. I won't try the list. Protecting with the Windrunners, you know, upholding the law and justice with the Skybreakers, etc. It's that thing, and you can, you know, exemplify more than just one of those things. Like someone can exemplify, you know, justice and all these things, right? But I'm very curious. This has my head kind of spinning a little bit. Could you ideally, like, okay, let's just say you've unlimited time on Roshar. Could you, like, really, I don't know, hone and exemplify a lot of these like, you know, character traits and bond multiple spren? Or is that, this just has me thinking a lot. I've never thought of this as a possibility. Like I said, it's very intertwined with who you are. And so I don't think of like that changing, you know, you like, you are a Windrunner or you are a Truth Watcher, you know, it's a different thing.
We talked about this a little bit, a couple episodes ago, the idea of immortality applied to humans. If you live long enough, can you go through different stages of your life, therefore different orders? Like, you know, in your young 20s, you're super ambitious and you want to be a Windrunner, you want to fly around. Well, okay, what about in your 60s when you want to be a Truth Watcher? Or, you know, you want to settle down and be a scholar, you know, that type of thing. Okay, or can you evolve into a bondsmith? Interesting ideas, if not at the same time of, can you be different ones at different times in your life?
See, Trevor, that's a really, really great point. So as we see the Knights Radiant coming to be again in our current story in the Stormlight Archive, it's kind of in its infancy. People are popping up.
Right.
Like the Spren are sort of coming back. We have seen glimpses of what it was like before, whenever people were more bonded and the heralds were young, you know, whatever. I'm wondering if that is a thing and we just haven't seen it yet. Like we haven't really been introduced to that aspect, because that makes sense logically in my head of, you know, the young, ambitious Windrunners and Dustbringers and Skybreakers, you know, doing their thing. And then through whatever growth, life stages, maturity, whatever, there's more scholarly type radiance, you know. But like, are you only one or the other? Is there a transition? Is there a period where you have two? Do you have to say goodbye to your old spren to become part of a new order? There's a lot of gray area for me right now. I'm very curious about, because I'm like, if you could, like we said, hypothetically, infinite time, let's say Hoid, right, gets 10 spren, all 10 orders. That's got to be like the most, we've talked about Elantrians maybe being the most powerful investiture wielders because of the tools in their toolkit. I'm like, I feel like if you could harness the powers of all the surges, that'd be pretty impressive.
So after this chapter, there's a popular Kaladin theory. You guys want to hear it?
I am curious. Yeah, I would like to hear this.
So as we've seen a Rhythm of War and how Rhythm of War progressed and Kaladin kind of stepping away from being an active combatant, people have theorized that what if Kaladin moves past being a Windrunner and becomes more like an edge dancer, the therapist, surgeon, like edge dancer Kaladin, and does he bond an edge dancer spren? Does something happen to Syl? You know, that type of thought train, people are profiling Kaladin closer to an edge dancer than a Windrunner by the end of Rhythm of War.
And this brings me back to the tough questions that, Paul, you were talking about a few minutes ago. It hadn't really crossed my mind that abandon your Order of Knights Radiant was going to be an option, I think largely because of the spren. You've got like a person there along with you, and abandon your oaths surely means kill your spren.
Surely.
Based on what we know.
Or at least deeply wound or like hinder, right? Because we've seen that happen. Like we've seen...
Kill has an interesting definition when it comes to spren, just to start. Right. But yes.
And so, like what you're talking about there maybe comes at the sacrifice of Syl in Kaladin's example. Like, oh, goodness gracious. That's going to be terrifying.
To be clear, do I think that will happen? Do I think that's where we're going? No. But could it feasibly happen with someone else? I think the answer is yes after this chapter. I don't think it happened with Kaladin, but I do think it could happen with someone else.
I'm wrestling with a couple thoughts. First of all, if that were to happen, I see the similarity because in Rhythm of War, we see Kaladin sort of being forced out of the warrior spot into a figuring out other things, surgeon, supporting almost role. And I could see that. I could see the his story being understanding the importance of the surgeon role. That's been a huge integral part to his story with his father, everything, right? And I could see that being the case where he becomes an edge dancer, whatever. However, Kaladin's Stormblast is so synonymous with the sky, right? Sure. That I can't picture a Kaladin that cannot fly. So that would lead me to say that if that were the case, it would be where he has bonded both spren. And it's not giving up Syl for another, but now being able to fly and heal people. However, my counter thought is, I feel like if you start opening that up, I feel like that's too big of a can of worms to open up, in my opinion. I feel like you have to still fit in one box at a time, which is a little unfortunate, but I feel like logically going forward in the story and just for the magic system overall, I feel like you'd have to sit in one box at a time.
Let me give you a little bit more feasible version of the theory. Kaladin retires, passes Syl to Oradin, and then picks up the Stormfather or something like that. Like you pass along your spren as opposed to kill them.
And thinking back to Sigzil here in this story, this is bringing up questions for him as well, because he seems very remorseful about auxiliary. He is sad about the fact that auxiliary got so damaged by the Dawn Shard. I don't see any mention of his Windrunner spren. I don't remember if we've met them specifically, if we even know their name from, Rhythm of War. But it seems like either that portion is so far in the past that it's not important to him anymore, or he's intentionally not remembering. He's intentionally trying to not think about that time. It seems a little bit suspicious that he doesn't ever think about that spread.
I'll just say this. All we know is Sigzil has an unnamed female Windrunner spren.
Okay. So I'm now left with this big burning question, which I think is going to be really relevant over the next few months with where we're going on our reading plan. What the heck has happened on Roshar? And are we going to see those events, or are these even references to events that are going to be post Stormlight 5.
Yep.
That was going to be my question. I'm curious to know. I want to know y'all's predictions. Do you think the questions that we're asking right now, do you think these are questions that will be somewhat addressed, whether or not we see Sigzil specifically? Do you think that these are questions that will be addressed in Stormlight 5, or is this going to be back half Stormlight?
I have a little bit of insider knowledge on this, but not that much. But with that caveat, I've read through chapter 20 of Wind and Truth. I don't know much at all of the answer to your question. So with that said, I don't think this will be in Wind and Truth. I think there is too much that has to happen in Wind and Truth for us to get solid answers on Sigzil, who's like C tier character at best. Like, not like quality of character, but like, you know,
relevance order, to the primary story.
Order of point of view paged time. Like, I love Sigzil, especially after this book. But do I think we're going to spend quality enough time with Sigzil for us to get to know his spren, him reach fourth ideal, and then something happened, and then a Dawn Shard? Do I think all of that is happening out of seemingly nothing in Wind and Truth? No, I don't.
I kind of want to say the same thing, but then at the same time, I'm still a little stuck on Nomad is making these references to, oh yeah, back when I used to be a leader, and we all saw how well that went.
Yeah.
Like, comments like that could be relevant in my mind in a Wind and Truth, because where we left him, he was the leader of the Windrunners. And so is that not going to change all the way through Wind and Truth, or are we going to see some kind of a breakdown of the Windrunners or schism where the Windrunners are splitting away from other orders, going a different direction? Some type of event like that I could maybe see being in Wind and Truth, which if that's true, I almost kind of don't like that, because I don't know. We'll have to read and find out.
Spoiled on it?
Maybe, kind of. Like, not incredibly spoiled, but I think we referenced this a little bit earlier too. I don't really want there to be stuff in here that either I need to read before Wind and Truth or is going to spoil me for Wind and Truth. I don't like those bits of larger plot to be so strongly woven through these. I want them to be more loosely woven. So I'm voting for this is vaguely relevant to what we're about to see in Wind and Truth. But it seems like it might be more than that.
My prediction on this, I have a two-pronged prediction. I think if we get a semblance of an answer to this whole multiple orders per person, can you have multiple spren at a time, can you pass off spren, whatever. I think if we're getting an answer to that, I think it will be in Stormlight 5, actually, but I don't think it will be through Sigzil's perspective. I don't think we're going to see like a Sigzil's big moment, but I think we might see something where this happens, where we can look at Sigzil's story and be like, this is what must have happened. I could see it being with Kaladin, like we mentioned. I don't necessarily know if that's where I'd hang my hat on the prediction, but something like that potentially. I think that'd be the case. And if not that, if we don't get a confirmation of that, then yeah, I don't know if we'll see this. I guess it'd have to be a back half thing. Unsure, but very interesting. I did not think this is where conversation would be going for this episode.
Yeah.
This is, like I said, this book has been particularly dense, and it has been a while. Like, I don't know. It's just like, there's so many little details. It's pretty impressive.
If we're just talking about wish list stuff, I want this to be in the back half, because I want to spend time on other stuff in Wind and Truth, and I want to spend a lot of time on this, because this is really cool, and I want this to be fully fleshed out and not kind of like crammed in three interludes in Wind and Truth. Like, that seems really odd, but I would love for this to be fully discovered or fleshed out, like the multiple spren thing. Can you be a part of multiple orders? Does that cause issues with your spren? You know, the Dawn Shard versus the spren, all of that I really do think is really cool. I don't want it in Wind and Truth.
I would agree with that. As curious as I am to get answers, I think the integrity of Stormlight's story on its own is impeccable. And I think that could, I don't want to get too far into the weeds of major Cosmere implication magic stuff. So I agree with you on that. It'd be neat to explore that further, but maybe instead of all the stuff we've learned about Fabrials in the Era 1. Maybe we'll learn more about Spren mechanics in Era 2. Who knows?
With all our Stormlight discussion, kind of bringing it back to Canticle, the Dawn Shard that Nomad has, he begins to burn it away with this Sun Heart that he grabs, and then he's able to fight again. That seems like a big deal, because I read it as he's been on the run from the Night Brigade for a long time and hasn't been able to fight the entire time. Now that he can, that seems really important. What do you guys think?
I completely agree. It felt like a big moment, maybe even bigger than we're appreciating. Yeah, because it feels like he talks about, you know, all the planets he's been to running away from the Night Brigade. And it seems like the Dawn Shard event happened a while ago. So to have this torment with him this whole time, and then here we get to witness the moment where he gets to fight again, does seem pretty big.
Yeah. If I mean, we haven't finished the book yet, but if there was ever a secret project that I wish would get a sequel, it's this one. I want to know about the Night Brigade and Nomad and as he's on the run.
I wanted to talk about the fighting thing too a little bit, because it's been a major part of Nomad as a character. He can't fight, but he's such a good fighter. And then you have Rebecca. And yes, I'm insisting on pronouncing that name that way. I apologize to all of you audiobook listeners.
Incorrectly.
Yeah, it makes me laugh every time, honestly.
I'm sticking with it. I'm sticking to my guns. I had somebody else in our Discord was backing me up. Shout out to, I think it was Kim in the Discord. It's backing me up. Anyway, the fighting. Rebecca is like inspired by his fighting. He's like, wow, you lead well because you're dangerous. And she's like, oh, I want to be that. And there's a couple conversations where Nomad's like, I don't think you really do want to be this. There's a terribleness that comes to this. You could be a different leader. You could be someone who leads without having to fight. And then you have Elegy, who has lost like her personality. She's not who she used to be. We don't really know too much about what she used to be. Seems like she was an explorer, maybe an inspirational leader already, those kinds of things. Now she just has this burning desire to fight. It's all she wants to do. That's her drive. And Nomad has to have a couple conversations with her about you've got to find a purpose. You've got to find a correct reason to fight, not just go around laying about and destroying everything. And this scene, which has some really cool artwork, by the way, Paul, hopefully you had a chance to go see this one. It's not a super flashy piece of artwork. It's
the
maybe
bridge
a little
four
bit
scene where he says bridge four. Is that what you're talking about?
Yes. Yes. Where he fights off a bunch of Chard and then flashes the bridge four symbol as he's standing there in a bathrobe, because he actually got his clothes burned off a little while ago.
Yes. And
has just fought off all these Chard and is like, yeah, you know, moment at the end. I think Rebecca and Elegy witness this moment, and they're both like equally inspired by it for kind of different reasons. And I thought that whole kind of that arc was kind of cool.
Yeah. Rebecca at the end of the chapters here, she confronts Zellian about it. Like, I want to be a fighter. I want what you have. And you're right. Zellian says, there's other ways to lead, that you shouldn't be so excited to be a killer, to be a fighter. Cause earlier in this book, she kills the first for the first time, the scout that they find.
Yeah,
it's the first person she's ever killed, and it shocks her. And the book opens with her brother dying in front of her. So there's a lot that Rebecca's gone through this book already. So she's really trying to push herself of, I want to be you. I want to be as callous as you are about killing and stuff like that. And you're right. Zellian pushes back on it and says, well, hold on, that there's value in what you have as well. And then you're right, back to Elegy. Elegy has all sorts of stuff going on. Pretty much all that's left of her is some brief memories of Rebecca, and or not memories, like impressions is a better word for it. She knows that she used to like Rebecca, but she doesn't know why or something like that. And then the only thing she feels is fight, fight, fight. So when she sees Zellian, doesn't Zellian give her auxiliary to like fight with the
yes.
And so she was like a big fan of that.
But I do want to say it is really neat to see. So we know that the Sigzil we are seeing now is very different from the Sigzil that we've known, right? Very notably different. It is really neat to see these Bridge 4 shout-outs and these flashbacks, because while Sigzil is maybe, in Trevor's words, a C-tier character as far as like story plot, background.
I shouldn't have said that.
Sigzil, aside from our main characters, is one of my very favorites, actually, in Stormlight. But that aside, like you understand the meaning. I'm not throwing Trevor under the bus here. Like, you know, we're not going to get a book that's Sigzil's book, you know, maybe in second half, who knows? Anyways, it's neat to see the significance that he felt at this point way back in Bridge 4, in the camaraderie and the life stage, the way he's able to look back at Bridge 4 and be so proud of it. It's really neat to kind of see how that has affected him here, far later, completely isolated from anybody that he knows. You know, it is real. I like seeing the long term appreciation or long term. Trying to think of a good word for it. Endearment. Right. He feels. Yeah, yeah. Whatever his feelings are, inspiration that he still holds on to from Bridge 4 is really admirable.
Yeah. Anything else?
There was one scene I wanted to get you guys' take on. So chapter 40. There's a lot packed in a chapter 40, but the first half of it, Sigzil Nomad has just been renamed Zellian, which, by the way, we should actually talk about that briefly. They rename him Zellian, and he like recognizes that name. He goes, yeah. Oh, yeah, okay, that's a cool name. Comes from Yolin. And they're all like, yeah, whatever. It's just a cool name in our religion. So here you go, Zellian. Chapter 40, Rebecca is having her first conversation with him, and she like goes to it's all weird, right? Because we've got this different culture, religions, planets, all that. They have this whole, you know, sharing heat with each other, which you can do in like a ceremonial way, but then you can also do it in a romantic way.
Yeah.
She goes to do it in a romantic way with him. Do you guys catch this?
Chapter 40? She tries to like touch his face with her hand.
Yeah. She's like, you know, making a move. She's, you know, trying to go a romantic direction with him. And he shuts her down real fast. And, you know, it's like, no, I'm leaving. You can't do this. Not going to happen. Did that catch you guys off guard? That felt a little out of place for me. That whole like segment, I had a Paul moment and I was squirming at something that I should just get over, but it was kind of a weird one for me. What was your guys' take?
No, I felt this a bit, and I'm with you. It's been a long running joke. I'm very hit or miss officially on, on any kind of romance scenes in these books. I've reread The Way of Kings. I was still squirming with Dalinar and Navani. Definitely squirming then. I loved Yumi. I've been all over the place, you know. This, yeah, it was a bit funky. This one wasn't like huge for me, but I definitely see what you're saying, Elliot. I think that's pretty funny.
So what I'll say here is, yes, it's a little forced, if you will. However, I think it's Brandon saying, past this book, I don't want you thinking that Zellian's going to go back for Rebecca. at some point, or that there's going to be a continue on thing there. Like, yes, they're friends. Yes, they, that Rebecca had feelings. He's acknowledging it, that yes, this could have been a thing. I'm not making it a thing. And that's the reason for the scene.
And when I break it down into its pieces, like, I can't find any one piece that I actually have a problem with, because the kind of up and coming heroine having a crush on the big muscular fighter hero guy makes perfect sense, right? And for right. him to, you know, shut her down, nope, I'm moving on. I don't have time for a relationship, even if I did, you know, feel attraction to you, that kind of thing. Like, all those individual elements, none of them seem wrong, but just the whole thing put together kind of in the midst of our action sequence book, I don't know. It caught me off guard. It caught me off guard.
He's just shutting down all the fan fiction writers of, no, this is not a thing. Don't make it a thing.
I appreciate him. Way to go, Brandon.
There you go.
And then later in that chapter, Rebecca and Zellian go on to have another conversation, which I thought actually was really fascinating, and I enjoyed a lot more, because they start talking about hope, which is a huge thing for me in fantasy writing of any kind. The theme and concept of what is inspiring you? What is the driving force in what you're doing? What do you believe in? All those elements of hope are a cornerstone kind of tenet of fantasy writing for me. And they kind of get into that conversation a little bit, where Rebecca is insistent that she's going to hope in this, what do they call it? The refuge, this bunker that they hope is real.
Yeah.
And Zellian's like, you really got to accept that it's not real. Like, stop hoping that. And she shuts him down. She like interrupts him mid-sentence. She's like, no, I know there's a possibility it's not real, but I'm going to hope in it anyway. And I thought that was kind of cool. And I think Zellian responds with like, okay, fine, hope in that, but also realize you might have to hope in something else in the future. And that's kind of where the conversation ends. But I love any exploration into that idea of where's your belief? Where is your hope lie? And for Zellian and Rebecca to talk about it was in this scene was cool.
I think the distinction that Rebecca asks him is important. She asks him, do you know 100% this is that's what we'll find? And Zellian says, no. I mean, I know 99% of the, I'm sure. But Rebecca asks him, is that 100% what we're going to find? And Zellian says, I don't know. And then Rebecca says, let me hold on to that. So you are willing to dismiss it for us because it's like, it's not likely. I'm willing to hold on to it as long as there's that 1% to work towards something, because this is really the only plan they have.
Yep. That was the only thoughts I had, but thought it was worth mentioning, because chapter 40 was a good one. A little bit of a roller coaster, but a good one.
Sounds good. Anything else from these chapters?
Just a simple question that maybe now's a good time to ask you guys. What should we be referring to this character as by name going forward? Is it Zellian? Is it Nomad? Is it Sigzil? Like, both in the final chapters of this book and after this book, what do we call him?
This is a really good question I've wrestled with, actually. Anytime I've written a live reaction, I keep putting Nomad, I think, primarily. Unless I don't know. I probably haven't even done that. Yeah, I'm all ears on this. I feel like Nomad is a fun name, personally. I've kind of stuck with that in my head, even though I know it's Sigzil. He's the primary, his like actual name, if you will.
Just as a side note, the name of the book is none of those three, and it's still referring to Nomad. So I made this offhand comment, I think while Alex was on the podcast, about how the secret projects are like a title and not the actual name, because we have Tress, and then we have Yumi and the Nightmare Painter, and then we have Sunlit Man. Yeah, Nomad's got like five different names going at this point. So yeah, whichever one you want to use. By the end of this book, I still think of him as Sigzil, especially within the context of Stormlight. But by the end of this book, I call him Zellian because Zellian's a really cool name.
I have to say, though, yeah, these are all really, really cool names. You know, yeah. I joked about his, you know, mentor, if you will, if we want to call Wit a mentor for him. Has a lot of names, but I think Sigzil here edged out in the cool names department. He's got Sigzil, Nomad, Zellian, Sunlit Man, sort of.
Sunlit Man's definitely the worst one out of the four.
Yeah, versus Hoid and Wit is less cool. Safandrius, though, I give you that.
Safandrius,
that's a fun name.
Yes, sir.
That's a fun name. But overall, neither of them, not as good as, what is it, Glorf? Is it Glorf?
Glorf, yes.
That is still really high up there. But
Adonalsium will remember our plight eventually.
Yeah. But Sigzil is, you know, that's a good one. But he's got some good names.
Go ahead, Trevor.
Just as a side note on the Adonalsium will remember our plight eventually, I was very grateful that he was not a mainline character and we were going to hear that the entire book. I was like, okay, that's funny. Ha ha. That's really annoying. And he was only in two chapters, so that's fine.
I'm pretty sure the like book designer would have vetoed that because they'd be like, okay, you just added three pages to your book because of your name that's so long and has to be printed 25 times in your book. My last thought on the name, I really want to call him Zellian going forward, if that will make sense, because I think there is something cool about, you know, a name that is given to you versus a name that you've earned. And Zellian like carries a meaning for him now, which is really cool. Whereas Sigzil, super cool name. It honestly is the one that my head wants to say. It's feels wrong to move away from that. Cause like you said, Paul, it's like, oh, that's his real name, right? Sigzil, like that's who he is. But I almost want to embrace Zellian to like give credit to the cool progression we see here in these chapters in this book. So I don't know. We got to talk about the rest of the book, I guess, before we make that final decision. Yeah. But I'm liking Zellian, I think.
I agree with you. I think we could stick with Zellian. The joke I have about that is, you know, has anyone grown up with a friend who, you know, you grow up and they have the name that you grew up calling them, and then as they get older and become an adult, start working and things, they go by maybe what is their actual name or like the full version of their name? Like, you know, growing up, I had my friend Timmy. I still think of him as Timmy, but his, you know, he goes by Tim or something more, you know, he doesn't go to his job
more
as
professional,
Timmy,
right?
You know, and I think of stuff like that, and I think it's funny.
Well,
Elliot, I feel like that's how I think of Sigzil because that's who I know, but maybe he's got his more professional names now. Who knows?
Elliot, are you going to confess your high school nickname now?
Ooh, I did have a high school. I still have a lot of people that call me by this name. I went by EJ for a good 6 years of my life.
There we go. See, I'm excited to get this reveal because I've heard one of the guests on our podcast, Tim, who is not the Timmy I was talking about, by the way. This is someone different. Tim, I think whenever I've heard him refer to you, Elliot, I think I hear him say EJ. So that must be that moment. Connecting the dots here.
Paul, back to what you were kind of joking at the beginning of the episode. They name him Zellian. And then they share, like, they kind of ceremoniously share their heat with him. They each go over to him and then share their heat with him. Which Auxiliary points out, okay, this is actually significant. You are now of Canticle. Like your spirit web thinks you're from this planet. So that, I mean, that's important moving forward, that Zellian is of Canticle and can use Canticle-ness. I don't know. Can use the power of the planet.
You're right. I've been waiting for these moments. You know, every time we get a skip capacity update, he's like 5 or 6%. And I'm like, okay, when are we going to get to like 70%? You know, when are we going to get to something cool? you know, this feels like the beginning of that, maybe.
Sounds good. Good discussions. Let's reconvene next week with the end of the book. After next week, we are Cosmere Current for like a full 3 weeks until Dragonsteel. Congratulations, guys. We will reconvene then. Thanks for joining me, Paul and Hilliard.
Happy 22-tooth episode.
Thank you for that. Oh, that makes me happy. Yes, thank you, everybody. And especially to Hubris in Excess. Very thankful for you and for unfortunately allowing me to butcher your username live. Have a great week.